Welcome to the 12th Step Within, sponsored by Greater Seattle Intergroup. At this time, please silence all cell phones and pagers. So, I'm so glad you're here. My name's Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater and the leader for this meeting. Will those who wish to please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. As we extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer, let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you're welcome at this meeting. Are there any other compulsive overeaters here besides myself? Welcome, everybody. Is there anybody here for their first, second, or third OA meeting? Or anybody who's new to the Seattle area? Okay, great. So we're going to work today with the idea of the 12th step within. And I'll tell you about that in just a minute, but a couple housekeeping things. It'd be good if you had picked up or get now the slipping and sliding tools. And one of the reasons it's just one-sided is you can use the back to write your answers on, but there's also writing paper back there if you need more. And it'd be great if you had a kid's view of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. This is a borrow for today, and if you want to buy it, you can. Just turn it back in if you don't want to. And then later at the end, we'll work with the recovery insurance policy, so we can get that at the end. And there will be a break about halfway through and other activities. All right, so I am, like I said, the topic is the 12th step within. The idea here is in the 12th step, it says we carry the message to those who still suffer, and that includes people who are already in OA, but who are still suffering. And I'm wondering if someone would volunteer to read from December 12th. It turns out that December 12th, which was yesterday, has a great way to get us started. Thank you.
Our chief force in life is somebody who shall make us do what we can, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Only one person can make me do what I am capable of doing, myself. But I need as much support as I can get from friends, sponsors, and every single one of the OA members who go to meetings week after week. It is important to be clear in my mind that other people have only their love and support to give, to inspire me to work the program and to achieve abstinence. They cannot do these things on my behalf. The strongest and most dependable support I have is my higher power, which is there for me at all times and whose will for me is to do the best I can. For today, I'm putting my God-given abilities to more and better use in this program, thanks to the presence of God in my life and of my fellow OAs who are following the same path.
Thanks, Rachel. Okay, so my name is Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater. And what I'd like to do is give you the quick outline of the day and then jump right in. So I'm going to speak about steps 1, 2, and 3, my own experience, strength, and hope. And then we'll have time for a writing exercise, and that's when we'll use those slip questions, and then a chance to share about that writing. So this is a participatory, active event today. And that should be like our first probably almost 45 minutes or whatever, and then there's break time. We've got flyers from events and stuff like that, when people want to be able to talk to their old buddies and new buddies. And then we'll reconvene and do like a lightning speed version of steps 4 through 9. And I had planned this 2 weeks ago to talk about the tools, steps 1, 2, 3, and then talk about the tools. And this morning when I woke up, I felt a clear message saying one of the themes in World Service Organization right now is working all 12 steps. And so we're going to work all 12 steps today. So we won't really talk about tools so much as we'll use them, but we'll talk about all 12 steps. So in the second piece, we'll do steps 4 through 9, and you'll have a chance to do a mini 4-step. There's even like half sheets of paper if you just want to write that much. So you can experience that and sharing again. And then we'll look at steps 10, 11, and 12. And be out of here by 12:30. So there we go. It's going to be fast. It's going to be good, though. All right. So I would love to have somebody help me by timing. I can time myself, but I'm realizing timing myself isn't good. I need help. So what would be great? Let's see. Let me just adjust here a little bit. I want it to be done by 11. So can you give me 5 minutes, 5 minutes, and 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. All right, so let me begin by telling you my story. I got way too many papers over here. I got some pictures. I grew up in Montana, lots of wide open space. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, amazing. My parents went through the Depression, meaning the Great Depression of the 30s. Oops. And meaning I grew up being taught some of those values from their experience. And I think those are significant shapers of my life. But in my OA life, I feel I came in through the door of AA, not because I'm an alcoholic, but because I'm a member of Al-Anon, not active right now, my partner at that time was an alcoholic, and I became very familiar with AA, and I'll tell you that in a minute. I think other people come into this program more through the weight loss industry, and I certainly have lots of things in my story to talk about weight, because hey, I'm a woman in the USA, so I have a lot to say about weight. But I think those are different doors, and so today, the 12 steps is probably more on the AA side of things than on the how do I moderate food plan stuff. But it's all important. You know, we have a left foot and a right foot. Okay, so now I'm going to try and be more specific. What is step one? So this is where the little handout is going to be helpful. Would someone please read from in there? Actually, two parts to this. Would somebody please read the actual step one, which we have here? That's just the summary of step one.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Okay, now the kid version is really cool. It was published in 1992. Would someone like to read the kid version?
We told ourselves that we didn't eat like other boys and girls, and that we could not stop eating when we wanted. We felt it.
Yeah, I love the picture in there. This girl is eating. That looks just like me. The other people are in a conversation and there happens to be food there, right? So in me, if there was ever food involved, that was what my conversation was with that food. I don't really know why. I mean, my mother, she cooked out of Betty Crocker cookbook 3 meals a day. She made a pie every Sunday. She cooked fried chicken and pot roast, and we had food. We didn't have to hide food. There was always cookies in the cookie jar. It wasn't restricted from eating food. But I was always more interested in food than the people around me. And when I began to realize it, I began to have a sense of secrecy, that this needed to be secret. And so one of the characteristics of my eating is secret, solo, and sweet. I found as the more I ate the food I wanted, it was always the sweet food. But pretty much any food was what I wanted, especially if I could eat it by myself. So step one to me is, ew, I don't like what I'm doing with food. And I don't like this feeling that I can't stop it. And one time I was in a meeting where somebody said, you never have to eat that way again. And I was like, wow, if only I could believe that, because I think that every day, but then I screw it up again. So just to give you some examples, as a child, I did cute stuff with food. You know, I had penny loafers, and I used to put dimes in them, and then we had a 15-minute wait before the school bus, so we would go to the ice cream place, and you could buy 2 scoops of ice cream for 20 cents and eat those on the way home and be home, get on the bus, you know, be home for the bus. Then I would have my after-school snack that my mom, you know, and I worked out. Then I would have dinner. Then I would do my homework and have my after-dinner snack. So it was like, it was a good time of the day. But there was that sneaky part of it. One of the worst times I ever binged, and I really had a lot of pain on this day. I lived in college as a sophomore in a house with two other women, and one of those gals baked bread every week, homemade bread every week. And we ate it freely, but this one day I just ate like a half a loaf of that bread. I just ate that bread. It might have something to do with the fact that my best friend in college was going to meet with me and tell me something. I had a pretty good idea what he was going to tell me. That's the day I ate a half a loaf of bread. That makes me know that there's like sensitivity, like I can't stand the feeling of dread that I'm having there. So anyway, I ate that half a loaf of bread. Then we walked around Seattle Center, and he's talking to me, and I literally had to stop and let the stomach cramps pass me. I mean, I had a half a loaf of bread in me. I just say, stop the stomach cramps, and we could talk a little further. It's like, I had no ability to stop eating that bread. The only reason I didn't eat the whole loaf was, of course, I didn't want her to think that, you know, I'd eaten it, right? This whole sort of don't want other people to know I'm eating it. That's the secrecy thing. So secrecy is very clear to me and solo. So just moving on, because I got my time, which I really appreciate. Anyway, I could give you so many more examples, but these are some examples of out-of-control eating, and I don't know why. And I think that what I've heard in AA is really good. The compulsion to eat and the obsession of the mind that it doesn't understand it or doesn't think it's that big a deal. That's not that big a deal to eat the first slice of bread. It's a slice of bread. It's only 100 calories or whatever. It's never the first slice of bread, right? So the next step is step two. So let's have somebody read step two. I told you this was lightning. Let's have somebody read step two.
I will. In case you're recovering from the chagrin, came to believe the power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, or came to believe that a power greater than us could restore us to sanity.
Thanks, Casey. And would somebody read the kid version?
We thought that God could help us stop thinking about food so much.
Yeah. So to me, I grew up in a religion that meant a lot to me at the time. In fact, when the school closed down when I was after eighth grade, and I had to go to the public school, I was very, very nervous about it. I practiced the religion, and I thought that's what I had to do to be a good person. I had one of the sacraments that we had was that you could confess your sins, and so I started that in second grade at age 7. And I had this like mind trip about how many lies had I told, and so I would have a little slip of paper under my pillow, and I would write down my sins every day, like I wasn't obedient to my parents, I told some lies, and then I would have this thing like, well, how many lies did I tell? Because if I don't put the right number of lies down, then I've told another lie, then I have to put, you know, it's like, okay, I'm very mental. I think a lot. And that's a characteristic of me in here. My thinking has not helped. Surrendering to a greater power is what has helped. But I didn't realize that really honestly until like this month. And it's because I was asked to speak a couple weeks ago, and then I was asked to speak last week, and then I was speaking here. So I've been doing a lot of reflection, and I realized that maybe it's because of my early training into a mind that's such a thinking mind. I'm not saying it's a smart mind. I'm just saying it's a thinking mind. I think I have to earn that support of that higher power. So when I came into OA, I came into OA in 1989, or 88 maybe, I tried to do everything I was supposed to do. And I would have checklists, and I would do the checklists, and I would make my phone calls. But I wasn't really doing it to recover as much as I was doing it to really know that I was doing everything I was supposed to. It was just like that checklist that I did when I was in second grade. But one of the things that that we say when we read the introduction, you know, we read the steps and then it says, but I'm too weak, I'll never make it. I don't like that word weak very much, you know, because I've always used strength as one of the characteristics. I think that people coming out of the Depression era had to develop strength, and I learned from my parents that strength was a really important powerful thing, characteristic. And so I don't like saying I'm weak, but this whole program is about saying you're weak, but here's what I say. I'm too stubborn, I'll never make it. I'm too enmeshed with other people, I'll never make it. I'm too full of too many responsibilities, I'll never make it. I'm too doubting, I'm too exceptional, I'm too unworthy. This is a list of character defects. That's what they're talking about. And it's really helping me to go back and look at these steps and realizing that it's the spirit of the steps that is where I'm going to find what I need, as opposed to trying to like analyze those words in my mental way. So, but I did used to think that if higher power could restore me to sanity, why hasn't it done that? And I've had that sort of debate in my mind. But it's just like there's a lot of sayings like this that are really helpful. Like, you know, trust in God, but keep rowing to shore, you know, stuff like that. Like, I have to do my part. So I really feel grateful for the 12 steps, because this is my part. Do you know, I'll just take a breath here. Do you know when they first published the book, which has become the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they wanted the title to be The Way Out. Such a great title. Like, ew, I don't like how I'm eating. My life is messed up. I need a way out. They decided not to because of different copyright things or whatever. But I sometimes, that's another example where, like, if I don't like the title Alcoholics Anonymous very much, it sounds, doesn't relate to me or whatever, I'll just, okay, well, just call it No Way Out. All right. If I don't like the phrase, like, I'm too weak, I'll never make it, okay, don't just say, I'm too stubborn, I'll never make it. It's the same idea. And this is a freedom I've given myself, which is very different than how I was raised and my initial tendency to, like, try and do things right. Okay, that's my step two. There is a power greater than myself. I believe that from my childhood. But that power can restore me to sanity, and enough sanity that I can make choices that are sane around food. That is remarkable. One of the things I've learned in this program is that I have a choice around food, because I didn't used to think I had a choice around food. And a person said this was a meeting, thinking about where it was a group health Sunday afternoon meeting, so this must have been in 92 or 90. This thing I'm eating here, this cookie, this cracker, is not really a cookie or a cracker. It's a box of crackers. Not only that, it's connected by a chain to a grocery cart of crackers and things. And that is super helpful. Pardon me? You agree? Oh, 5 minutes. That has been so helpful to me to realize. This is why in AA they say it's just the first drink you have to worry about. For me, it's just that first bite. And I think that one of our challenges is to think about, like, what's the first bite for me? And if it's sweet, solo, and secret, that's a good measure that it's probably most definitely not for me. All right, let's move on to step three. Somebody want to read or recite step three?
Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand.
Thank you. And the kid version? Would someone read the kid version?
We decided to stop worrying about food and let God help us with our problems. Some people use the words higher power instead of God.
Yeah, I just love that. I decided to stop worrying about food. I mean, I still have to decide what to eat. Okay? And so being in OA has really helped me to figure out what to eat. And having a sponsor and trying different food plans, the dignity of choice is really helpful. That's a pamphlet that we have that it's like, choose a way to eat and then stop thinking about food so much and think about other things in life. And that is so hard until it's not hard. It's not hard. It's not hard for me right now, most of the time, not to think about food all the time. That is a miracle. That's a total miracle. Sometimes I have to think about food to plan a plan that will work. You know, holiday season, got to have a plan that will work today. Well, a big discussion, what are we going to do with this event? Is it going to be before the lunch hour? After the lunch hour? Are we going to have a break? Like, we got to think about that, because we all need to know when we're having our meals. And then the library only opens at 10. There wasn't time to make tea, so that's why there's not tea here. We made a decision. We made a decision. That's what that step is. We make a decision. And I had to do it backwards. The decision, it says, make a decision to turn my will and my life over. I had a hard time turning my will over, and I still do every day. I'm very willful. My mind has ideas. So I just said that backwards. I can turn my life over and my will. Turning my life over is very doable for me. It's really clear to me that there's a lot more going on than just me. And if you don't think so, there's electricity in this room I had nothing to do with. There's carpet in this room I had nothing to do with. There's a recorder here I had nothing to do with. There's a lot of stuff going on that's bigger than me. So that's not a hard one for me. I don't know if I'm making any sense at all. I just hope that I'm saying something that makes some sense to somebody. But what about this higher power? I do have three examples here. How the higher power puts, I'll just say angels, that's my word for it, puts angels in my path. When I was working downtown, this would have been in the early 90s again, And I was just, like, I just had to have something to eat. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had to have something to eat, and I was heading across the street to that deli, and I don't care if I have been absent from sugar for, at that point, almost 10 years. I don't care. You hear the willfulness, like, I am going for it. But I'm sort of also praying at the same time, like, little 5% of my mind is praying, and 95% of my mind is heading to the deli. And here walks across the street coming to me one of my coworkers, who I just love and adore, is a really fun guy. And we just stood on the corner and talked, and that all that willful energy just drained away, right? That was not my doing. That was so not my doing. Except I had to be receptive to that intervention. And I begin to think that higher power is intervening all the time if I will just notice. Here's another example. I left OA, and I thought after 12 years or 13 years I left OA, and I thought that I left OA because I was mad. But I've been looking back through my journal, which I happened to keep during that time period, and I can't really quite figure out what happened. But I did start, I was very involved in another religion at this time. So I grew up in a religion, of course I rebelled from that religion, and I got back into a different religion. So I thought the religion would take care of everything, but it didn't really take care of my food. So anyway, 12 years in OA, 12 years out of OA, back in OA, but I don't have time to get back into OA. I'm a busy person by this point, you know. I have things to do. I got responsibilities. And higher power puts into my schedule a meeting that's 2 blocks from my office at noon on Tuesday, like, go. Okay. All I have to do is go. And higher power put into my life a meeting 1 mile from my house in West Seattle on Thursday nights, go. And there's somebody at that meeting, for example, who nominated me to be events chair. Okay, I'll say yes to that. I got elected as events chair 1 year ago. That has so changed my life. Because of that, I went to the retreat and then the HOW retreat, and then working with other people on putting these events on. It's because I said yes there, because somebody from that other meeting nominated me. I wouldn't have gone to that meeting if Higher Power hadn't made that meeting. So these are the kind of, I talked about the chain of how food is connected to the grocery cart, but there's also this other chain of events going on where one good step forward on my own behalf leads to another. Thank you. I'm wrapping it up. I used to go to meetings downtown. I worked downtown during the 90s, and there were meetings at noon. Noon meeting is good for me, but one of them was in the church, and there was a thing on the church that said, it's in the shelter of others that people live. This is an old Irish saying. And I just feel that this is a way of summarizing the fellowship. You know, there's steps that we do, and you can be as religious about those as you want, but there's also a fellowship, and we shelter each other. And I just really appreciate that shelter. So, there you go. That's kind of my story, steps 1, 2, and 3. Let me look for a minute here on my agenda. What I want to do is stop talking and give you a chance. Actually, maybe I'll ask somebody to read September 3rd, which happens to be about step 3, and which also happens to be my birthday. And that'll be my summary of my story for this part. Anybody? Thanks, Michelle. September 3rd.
And this reading stems from fear of doing wrong, dire consequences. Oh dear, I must make the right choice, but what is it? I am so used to being in charge. I forget that I turned over control of my life to God, that my rule is to try to know God's will for me and then do it. To keep indecision from throwing me into a panic, I keep repeating, thy will be done, not mine. Always my burden is lifted. I feel lighter. I realize that God's will for me is not to make the right choice, but to feel free to make mistakes, to be sane. For today, beginning this very moment, I turn my life and my will over to my higher power.
Yeah, thank you so much. So helpful to not, yeah. Okay, so hopefully you picked up these tools. So this is actually first page of a 4-page document that's available on oa.org under documents. There's so much there. But I was going to suggest that we take about 5 minutes for writing, and I would like to suggest that we write on Second question, how did I know that my eating was out of control? There's not really time to do more reading, and so if you could just sort of use my story as to key into your story, that's my suggestion. And of course, if you don't want to write on that question, you can write on a different question. But I would like to offer about 5 minutes of writing, and then we'll have some opportunity for sharing. I'm going to give a chance for open sharing for maybe about 10 minutes if anybody would like to share from what you wrote or anything else you want to share.
My name is Dot, and I'm a compulsive eater in Galena.
Dot? Before you share, Dot, may I just interrupt you? I'm sorry. I just want to make sure you understand that we have a recorder going on, and we can either shut it off if you don't want it to be recorded, or you can use a different name or whatever, just so you know.
And if you let me know afterwards, I can cut it out, the recording.
Ah, wonderful, Rachel. Thank you. Sorry to stop you, Dot. Go ahead.
My eating was out of control at a very young age. My parents were at the Clean Plate Club, and we were to clean our plate whether we liked the food or chose not to eat because we were full. And I was certainly going to obey the rules. My father had a heavy hand, and I had no control of the food. The food in my life has been an enemy, and it started when I was 6. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
My name is Joanna. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Joanna.
I so relate to that enemy thing. From the time I can remember, it was out of control. My mother tells me I used to go into the refrigerator when she was vacuuming and eat sticks of butter at the age of 3. So, you know, I'm curious about whether born with this, developed this, I don't know, but I do feel just viscerally that it's the enemy. It's all I think about, it's all I worry about, it's omnipresent, and it's, you know, when it comes time to eat, it's never peaceful. I mean, I think I've had a couple of peaceful meals in my life, and they were very nice, and it was always when I was working away. And when I don't work away, my life is hell, because I have to face the enemy 3 times a day. And in many cases, it's more than 3 times a day, because I tell myself it's only going to be 3 times a day, but then 3 turns into 3.5, or, you know, 1.2 on the way to 3, 2.3 on the way to 4. Anyway, grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hi, I just remember the time when I was with a friend of mine. We stole sugar cookies out of her mom's freezer and went and hid behind the hedge across the street. And we had like 3 dozen, and we ate all of them. And I remember feeling really, really ill. And I still don't really care for them. And I just intermittently throughout my life, I knew I had a problem. When I was about 35, I really had this understanding that food was going to really be an issue until I dealt with my spirituality. And it's taken, you know, this long. And then over these last 5 years, when I was in Florida, I got totally out of control and got really obese, more than I ever had gotten before. And I knew I wasn't, you know, I shouldn't be eating all the sugar and the flour and the fat I was eating, but I could not stop. I mean, I was just really, to feel so out of control. You know, no matter how much I told myself to stop, I could not, I couldn't. I just kept eating. And I tried Weight Watchers again, and it didn't work. And I got so desperate, I came out away, thankfully. And I really regretted when I went to recovery, thank God. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm Claire, I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi, Claire.
I'll just read some of my ways that I knew my eating was out of control. I knew my eating was out of control in comparison to watching others around food. knew my eating was out of control because I was irritable with or without food, based on food. My participation in things centered on food. My anxiety went up or down based on food. I would hide and hoard food or steal food when I didn't hide, hoard, or steal anything else. I would eat sugar to the exception of other foods. Thinking about nutritious food for others, but being unwilling to make those food choices based on nutrition. Reprieve during my pregnancy. I had no compulsive overeating symptoms during my pregnancy, so then I knew what it felt like to not have compulsive overeating, and it was not the way I normally felt. My weight was higher than other people's, and my sense of that was very distorted. Severe body image issues, overall work based on weight, size, and relationship with food. My mood and my energy varied on based on what I was eating, but I didn't eat well to help moderate that. And the quantity and frequency of sugary foods was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I love it.
I'm really new to the life. Just last week was my first time.
Welcome.
I can't hear you.
Sorry, I'll try to be louder. I have been on diet since I was 11. I have been on a pendulum swing. I always thought I had it under control. And last year, I realized that the binging had kind of gotten out of control, and I wasn't in my control, and I thought I could snap myself out of it, go on another diet or another thing, and I just saw myself going on this, honestly, it was a 50-pound pendulum swing, master of diets. I realized that there's a problem when I saw myself shaking one day. I wanted food so bad. I've suffered with depression and anxiety because of that, and I started on a lot of change.
Great, thank you. Glad you're here.
You're welcome.
Maybe one more share, and then.
I am Edward.
Perfect. Hi, Edward.
Hey, Edward.
I can't really remember the first time that I knew my eating was out of control, because every time that I actually honestly face it is out of control. I did not tell myself, but there's no solution for it. And so I went and hid in the food again. At 17, I had my first full-time job, and that let me get all the food that I craved. And I believe the round table delivered over 3,000 calories to my lower 5 nights in a row. That's the first time I can remember an extended binge. Later on, I was living out of my car and binge shopping with crackers. And reasonably healthy for the whole wheat crackers. What could go wrong with that? Except, you know, putting away the entire box and then blowing behind the wheel. Yeah. At 22, I was at a party with a bunch of stoners. I was the only one who didn't partake, but we found out that the girl didn't agree with me. But I ate more than any of them, and even though they had munchies.
Right.
And at 32, I hit 304 pounds, and that scared me half to death. And with all that fear and all the willpower in the world, I could only release 19 of those pounds. Those are times that I knew for sure that I was doing my
job. Thanks, Edward.
Thanks.
I don't want to rush anybody, but does anybody else want to share? Okay. Hi, welcome. Okay, so my suggestion is that we take a little break.